All right, good morning, everybody. It is Thursday morning, 9 a.m., May the 6th. And we are going to do some deals elder reactions this morning, a little bit of interactive work. And what I was going to try to do, I think, is to work on some of these co-op exercises that I have. They're good exercises to do for deals elder stuff. And I'm looking to see. Yes, we got a good amount of deals elder reactions to do here. So let me go ahead and screen share. I was trying to think if I want to do it on my iPad or if I want to do it, I think I do, because I want to be able to write. So let's do it this way. So lab notes, and to get there, me, hang on 1 second. All right, back on. So these are the exercises that I want to work on. And these will challenge you in terms of seeing different deals elder reactions and thinking about the different ways in which deals elder reactions can run and looking at the products that are going to come out of these. And normally I would do these as a co-op, but I'm concerned about time being short and taking a lot of time to work on these. And I think that we can do better work by working together through some of these problems. So let's take these, let's take the first one and look at this intramolecular deals elder that is set up. So this guy here, and let's take that and bring that into a problem solving session. So what we want to do is we first want to, I can still see it, I'm good. Draw this way. And then catch this last part, which is a stereo center, but the stereo center is not defined for us. And this one goes at 0°C. Partly because if we look at where the dyeing is, so this is the dyeing component and the electron donating group. And in fact, there are actually two electron donating groups because this group can function as an electron donating group as well. And then the dienophile. That has the electron withdrawing group on it. And then whenever you have an intramolecular reaction, a reaction that happens within the molecule, it is always faster than reactions that happen between two molecules that require a collision in order to take place. So I suppose the question is, what is the product that comes out of this? In terms of doing these, we have to ask the question, is there any other orientation that can happen with these? And because the molecule is constrained by forming a ring system here, or at least it will when we make the bonds between these two, that there's really not the ability to be able to turn this diene around and look at throwing this to the other side or even throwing this endo, that we're not going to be able to throw this endo, that the only way that this reaction is going to be able to take place is it's going to have to take place through an exo transition state. And I think that you can see that particularly if we take and try to draw this in a fashion where we can sort of see what's going on. This gets thrown to the outside. Notice how I'm falling back on numbering systems in order to keep track of where everything is. So on carbon number 5, I've got that group there. 6, 7, I've still got to wrap around to 8. And then 9. And I think what I'm going to do is actually, I'm going to take all of this out for a second. Before I add that in there, I'm going to do this. Which is to put 9 and 10 in into its orientation. And then the rest of what's going on out in the rest of this molecule, that's going to be 5, 6, 7, 8, and connect it to 9, and 8 has the carbonyl on it, and 5 has that bond on it. Now, normally I wouldn't ask you to try to draw this, but I want you to try to visualize it. So I want you to see kind of where the reaction is going and why this group cannot turn and go endo in terms of this thing trying to react. That's going to be really hard for it to be able to do. Is that helping to visualize it a little bit and to see how this thing is coming together? Actually, I can't see your faces with other stuff that I've got up. So let's take it and let's go ahead and do the diels alder reaction. We'll move electrons that way, and that way. And so we're going to make a 6-membered ring system joined to a 6-membered ring system. We started out here at carbon number 1. This goes to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So 1 got connected to 10, 9 got connected to 4, 9 to 4, 1 to 10. So those are my new bonds. The diene system is still there. Connected on carbon number 2, I have a methyl. Connected on carbon number 5, I have an isopropyl. Connected on carbon number 8, I have a carbonyl. And then I haven't dealt with my double bonds. The double bond here that was between 9 and 10 is gone. That's appropriate. But I should be getting a double bond between 2 and 3 from this arrow right here. So that's going to put a double bond in that orientation. And then the last thing that I need to do is I sort of need to decide on stereochemistry. And the stereochemistry happens to be what's going on at this bond, 8 and 9, and this bond, 4 and 5. So what I want to remind you about is the model that we looked at the other day. So let me take that model and redraw that. And that's going to be something that we're going to fall back on quite a bit as we go forward. A, B, B, A, Z. And then these, I like to do endo and exo. And then when we put these together, we We get the six-membered ring system, double bond back here. These are the Z groups. And then I always do this from an orientation where the diene is on top and the dienophile is on bottom. And what that does is that pushes B up and A back. So B winds up coming up, A winds up going back. We said that what was ever endo goes down, back, such that whatever is outside and inside, these guys both wind up going in the back position. There's my exo, and then the same thing on the bottom. Okay, so I can use that model to look back and try to figure out what is the position of this bond relative to the diene. Is it endo or is it exo in terms of the way that it's lining up in this model? I mean, normally I know that we would want to do endo, but because of the restrictions and the way that this thing is wrapping around, it's only really going to be able to achieve exo. And so in its exo orientation, as it is, that means that exo is going to wind up being up. So this stereocenter is going to be an up stereocenter. And then I need to look at this bond and decide, is that pointing out away from the diene or in towards the diene? Is it an A group or a B group in its orientation? And we can see that in its orientation, that it's in an A group orientation. A groups wind up back. And so that would wind up back. And then there's also the possibility that while I have oriented them this direction, that this thing could swing and come from the top as well as the bottom face. And so we always get plus minus. That's kind of a lot that went into that. But the model, I think, is one of the key things, is bringing back that model and understanding how that model works. Let me show you the next one. I'll give you guys a few seconds with the next one, or minutes, as the case may be. So the next one looks like this. And here what I do is I draw a long bond, I exaggerate that bond in order to give us room to really be able to put the rest of this molecule in here. Now, diethyl aluminum chloride is also a very strong Lewis acid. And so you'll see that we'll swap up Lewis acids a little bit more. You're still looking for Lewis acids. Your Lewis acids are going to contain boron, aluminum, and in a lot of cases, you'll see iron sneak in there as well. And you'll see different R groups attached to the boron and the aluminum and the iron. You'll see things that are BCl3. You may see things with ethyl groups BCl. Aluminum, same thing. You might see aluminum trichloride. You might see E2 aluminum Cl. You might see ferric chloride or ferric bromide. There's just a lot of different Lewis acids that you'll see. And so what you're keying into in terms of Lewis acids is the metal. I know we don't think of boron all the time as a metal, but most people will refer to these guys as metals, as Lewis acids. Okay, so the question then is, what happens here? Try to use the same process that I used on the one above. Try to go through first, decide where the reaction is taking place between which atoms, number everything. Decide on where your diene and your dienophile are. Go ahead and draw the product without any stereochemistry. Go back and use the model and decide where the stereochemistry goes, whether it's an endo group, an exo group, an A group, a B group, or a Z group, in terms of how everything winds up going together here. So I'll leave the model in place. Maybe even I'll leave the one up above. Take a minute and see if you can make progress on putting that together. Let me know if any questions come up, what the questions are. You guys are super chatty today. It's early, I get it. Good, JC. Not good that you're struggling, but good that you're focused. Deals all are harder. There's a lot more going on, for sure. It's there's a lot more things to pay attention to in terms of these reactions and so many stereocenters. Okay, so I'm going to start out just by mapping my diene and my dienophile. And then looking at where those bonds are going to be made. And then as I look at those bonds, where they're going to be made, maybe what I can also do, I hesitate to throw more color onto this, but maybe what we can do is take and say, look, A group, B and B, and in looking at this, we have an A group that's coming off of that. We can do the same sort of thing with the endo and exo. Endo groups, and use a light green for exo groups, and that I've got one which is set up in here to be endo. Again, I'm not going to try to rotate these because they're intramolecular, so I'm just going to take them and use them in the way that they have been aligned for me already. If they weren't lined up, that would be a problem. Okay, and then the last thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna number this thing. And whichever direction you decide to number, it's okay. We're not numbering it for nomenclature. We're numbering it in order to make sure that what we're doing when we bring these together, that we get everything connected in the right orientations. And then, as I said, what I'll do first is I'll take, and I always just, I know I'm doing a Diels-Alder. Because I'm doing a Diels-Alder, just draw a six-membered ring. Start there. Start by drawing the six-membered ring. And then also note that while we made a six-membered ring here between those guys, and we could even go in and number this now, which would not be a bad idea. We can number one here, two, three, that's four. They are connected to 10 and nine. So my new bonds are here. New bond between four and nine, and new bond between one and 10. And maybe even helpful to highlight, that was my diene. And I think I used red for that. Doesn't help me with my new bonds. Maybe I'll just leave the diene file alone, so I won't color that in, but we can see where the diene came and the new bonds that came into there. Okay, now we've got to get the rest of this other six-membered ring system that goes around. So we'll draw the second six-membered ring system. And then continue the numbering system and make sure that everything comes together correctly. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Off of 8, there is an OTMS group. Off of 10, there is an aldehyde. And I think that's all of our groups, but now we've got to decide on stereochemistry. So aldehyde would be endo. In this case, yes. In this case, the way it's oriented, if we look at the way that it's oriented, the aldehyde is actually pointing in towards the diene, while this group is pointed out away from the diene. So this group is going to be exo, and this group is going to be endo in the way that it's set up. That's correct. All right, so now we go back and we take a look at these two groups. So I've got to catch the stereochemistry of this group, which went endo, and I've got to catch the stereochemistry of this group, which went exo. And then also, I've got to catch the stereochemistry here at 4, 5. This bond is important to catch stereochemistry. So that bond there is in an A position outside of the diene. So what we do is we look at our model and we say, A's go back. This group here, which is exo, exo comes forward. We look at endo, endo goes back. And so we draw it with that intention. Okay, endo, back. Exo, forward. Make sure we hit the OTMS group. We didn't hit the double bond. Double bond should have been between 2 and 3. Should have caught that. And then the last group that I've got to hit is the 4, 5 group. And the 4, 5 group was in an A position, and an A position should be back. So that means that this group goes back. And that should be everything.
All right. So all you're doing to determine exo and endo is imagining in your head, overlaying that little, I guess, stick man over over wherever the double bond is.
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct.
All right. I can handle that.
That's all I'm doing. And Kelly, yes, there was a double bond between 2 and 3. And thank you for catching that. Okay, everybody good with this? Actually, what I think I'll do, just slide these things up just a little bit more. Try to bring this guy up here. So that would be our final answer and how that all goes together. Oh, and don't forget the plus minus. Okay, let's try another one. Now this one's going to require us to make more decisions. This one has a methoxy group and an aldehyde. These two are coming together, no Lewis acid, 85 degrees Celsius. And it asks a specific question in this, so we'll have to address this question. So the question that this one asks is, what is the major product from this reaction, and does endo versus exo matter here? Why or why not? Okay. So gonna go with XO and it matters. Okay. But Keegan's saying he's probably wrong. It's, you guys are like non-committal in your answers. So funny. Okay. This one is not constrained. So with this one, we need to do a couple of things. Number one, what we need to do is we need to decide endo versus exo in terms of how we're going to set it up. Regio, selectivity. This is partial positives and partial minus, and aligning the partial positives and partial minuses to get the regio selectivity correct. Number three, we will draw the product. And then four, we'll investigate the question that they're asking about endo versus exo. So that's what we've got to go through and do. So I'll give you a hint on deciding whether endo or exo is appropriate. In this case, we always take and we always make the group go endo. So if we have a group here that is an electron withdrawing group that has pi orbitals on it, as soon as we see pi orbitals, it's going to go endo. And if it doesn't have pi orbitals, we still generally consider endo to be the major product. Why? Because even though it doesn't have pi orbitals on it, a system that has an electron withdrawing group in that position usually has lone pairs of electrons. It's a more electronegative element, and it's still going to have an orbital which is going to reside on that, that is a molecular orbital that is going to give you that, that third sort of bonding impact that glues them together. And so there is always a preference for endo, regardless of the type of group, as long as it's an electron withdrawing group. And I can't think of any situations where we generally see exo as being the preferred state. Maybe if you had like a tertiary butyl group, but then a tertiary butyl group is an electron donating group, not an electron withdrawing group, and you've got other issues going on. So, and steric issues can take over at that point. But I would say 99% of the time, we just assume that it's going to go endo. Okay, so that means that we're going to have to line it up to make it go endo because it has not been aligned in any particular way. They've just been thrown down on the page. Now, how do we decide the partial positives and the partial minuses? And partial minus and partial positive, the partial positive is generally for the dienophile. And the partial minus for the diene. Because the dienophile is my electrophile and the diene is my nucleophile in most cases. So how do I decide partial positive and partial minus or find those things? What do I want to do? Resonance, yes. So this is not your typical resonance. JC Keegan, that's correct. Your typical resonance is to look at a charge, be it positive or negative, and to move the positive or negative around by the rules of resonance. Here, these are all neutral molecules, but we can use the concepts of resonance to understand that when you have an oxygen connected in conjugation and it can push, it does push. That takes and aligns my partial minus in an orientation like that. Carbonyls, being an electron withdrawing group, will pull electron density. And so I can look at pulling electron density to the more electronegative element, and that develops my partial positive. So it seems as though they are aligned correctly, except that I'm in a exo orientation, and I need to do this into an endo orientation to draw it and get it right. So what I could do is I could draw the transition state. Sometimes the transition states can be helpful for these where the molecule is not, so there's my partial positive, where the molecule is not an intramolecular reaction, where it's not constrained. And I want to take and I want to orient this guy, turning it inside. So what I would like to do is throw that towards the inside. The hydrogen is going to go towards the outside.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah. Did I freeze?
I think so.
Thanks. Much better. Okay. So now you can see the bonds at which I'm going, where I'm drawing things, and I've got my partial minus and my partial positive confused. There we go. So I have my electron donating group, which is pushing to make my partial minus, and my electron withdrawing group, which is serving to make my partial positive. And I have aligned them partial minus to partial positive. And the other thing that I have aligned is I have aligned my group endo in order to draw the product. So now what I will do is take those guys and go ahead and connect them . We can show the flow of electrons around the system. It's always helpful. Throw that group in there. The aldehyde comes down. And then we flatten the system out. And as we flatten the system out, this is going to be a six-membered ring system. It's going to have the double bond here and the methoxy group, and then the aldehyde will be there. Everybody good? Did I miss anything or not do anything or anything that I need to do at the conclusion of this?
Well, it's gotta be plus or minus, and then we gotta talk about the question.
Okay, so let's understand real quick where that plus or minus comes from, because you see how this was on the bottom and the diene was on the top. Let's swap it. Let's put the dienophile on the top and the diene on the bottom, and let's see what happens. So probably the easiest way is to just to redraw this. In doing these transition states, it helps if you make your bonds just a little bit longer than you would normally. And we're going to be making, oops. Bonds between those guys there. And so as we swing it around, electrons are going to swing this way, this way, that way, and we make the molecule this way, and this group now is endo, and endo in this case is going to point this orientation, and the hydrogen it's going to be in that orientation. And as I sort of look down on it and flatten it out to see what is happening with that molecule, I'm looking to see that I got everything in the right orientation and didn't mess up. And I did, I messed something up. You guys didn't catch what I messed up. See if you can figure out what I messed up on. Something's wrong. What's the best way to catch an error?
Number your things, carbon?
Yes, yes. Go through and number it. Let's start here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So this one is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. That means 2 is here, 3, 4, 5, 6 and 1 is there. Anybody see a problem? Two always had the methoxy on it. 2 has the methoxy, 2 has the methoxy. The double bond was between 2 and 3, 2 and 3. 5 had the aldehyde, 5 had the aldehyde, 6 got the aldehyde. See how easy it was to make that mistake?
Wow.
Do you see why I made the mistake? I made the mistake because I didn't number it. And then in catching it, going back and numbering it allows me to see it. But you see how subtle that mistake was. Nobody even caught it as I went through and did it. It just really goes to show how important numbering really is so that you prevent from making those mistakes. Sometimes we just think numbering is just a pain. I can see this. Why do I need to do that? Well, because even after 25 years, it's still pretty damn easy to make mistakes if you don't number it. So a good little lesson there. Okay. How did I see that? Because I saw that when I go to flatten this out, that this was going to be on the top of the ring system. And I knew in the previous one, I had just placed it on the bottom of the ring system. And so I knew something was wrong, but I also knew that I had drawn this in the right position. And so there was a little warning bell that was going off in my brain that was saying, I did it wrong on the other page. Put that guy in too, just so we can see it. Okay, the plus minus nature. Where does the plus minus come from? It's hard to say which one of these is plus and which one of these is minus, but we can just artificially ascribe one as plus and one as minus. This we could say is the plus transition state. Where we've got this guy on the bottom. The minus transition state could be assumed having this guy on top and that guy on bottom. And by reversing them, one is going forward, one is going back, one is going forward. And because of that, that's the only stereocenter which is set in this molecule. That's where the plus minus is coming from. So the plus minus is coming from the fact that I can have two equal transition states, allowing the group to go back and allowing the group to go forward. Okay, so that's where the plus minus comes from. We have the right product. The right product is determined. And now the question is, does endo versus exo matter here? Why or why not? So in order to address that, I think that what we need to do is we need to take this model and this transition state and looking at the product that we're getting out of this, and we need to turn this around and do exo and see what the product is that comes from the exo product. And then we can talk about it. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's look at exo transition state. Okay, so here what I want to do is I want to put this guy exo and go ahead and run it. And as I bring that together, well, let's do it this way first. And then the aldehyde is going to be up and the hydrogen down. So this is the exo position. In the endo position. And then we'll flatten that out. So that system is equivalent to this. Okay, so when I do exo, and this would also be plus minus, right? Because I could also bring this from the top and I would get the opposite if I brought it from the top. So this is also plus minus. So plus minus part doesn't change. So what happened here? Let's go back and look. When I do endo and I do this on the bottom, I get the aldehyde going back. When I do endo and I do this on the top, I get the aldehyde coming forward and that gives me the plus minus. When I do exo and I do this on the bottom, the aldehyde comes forward. And presumably if I do exo and put this on the top, the aldehyde goes back and thus I get plus minus. How are these products different, if at all?
They're not.
They are not, JC. They are not different. In fact, endo and exo products, when there is only one stereocenter, are identical and cannot be told apart. So what happens here is that this is the endo transition state, and the endo transition state is lowest energy. The reaction is going to go through the endo transition state. But when there is only one stereocenter, as is being created here, and I look at the exo gives me the opposite stereocenter. And so because I'm getting plus minus with only one stereocenter, endo and exo products cannot be differentiated. Even though it all goes through the endo transition state, the exo transition state would have given me the same products, but at a higher energy cost. So when they say, does endo versus exo matter here? Why or why not? Explain. When there is only one stereocenter that is being created and it comes out racemic, exo would have given you the enantiomer of the endo product. And because you're ending up with a racemic product anyway, you can't tell the difference. So the answer here to their question is that when only one stereocenter is created, the products, the endo and exo products, cannot be differentiated. As both give plus minus. And so endo is the enantiomer of exo. Does that make sense?
I had a quick thing. Since endo is still like the favored lower energy thing, is it technically like, will the reaction still proceed with endo and then like exo is just like, haha, you can't tell the difference?
That's right.
A higher energy.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's exactly right. So what JC said is that the reaction is all going to go through endo, and you're going to get products that look like they could be exo, but it all went through endo. You just can't tell the difference because endo is the lower energy. That's for this one. And what is unique about this one? What is unique about this one is that there is only one stereocenter. And because there's only one stereocenter, you make a pair of enantiomers. You get plus minus. Now, what happens if we have two stereocenters? Two stereocenters affords the ability to make two different pairs of enantiomers. And comparing those two different pairs of enantiomers means that we have the possibility of getting diastereomers. Then things start to get interesting. All right, let's take the next reaction. Next reaction is an amine and an ester, an alpha beta unsaturated ester. And this is going at 20 degrees Celsius. And we want to know, what is the major product and does endo versus exo matter here? Why or why not? So give major. And does endo versus exo matter? Explain. Same thing as we had in the last one. So we got to go through and we got to do all the same things. You want to take a minute and try and put it together yourself? You can see how you might have wrestled with this co-op for hours. Its intent was to be wrestled with for hours. And it would have led to a lot of questions that you guys would have been throwing around. But it's one of my favorite co-ops just because it is a little more complicated. Okay, so Keegan's going to say that endo matters this time. With more certainty than he did the last time. There's less waffling in that answer. Yeah, two stereocenters and exo introduced or causes two more versions. By two more versions, you mean two more stereoisomers. And so we'll see what happens here as we go through and look at this. Okay, so this part should go a little bit faster for you now. You should be able to take this and follow through and figure out where the partial minus is. And same thing here, where the partial positive is. This is aligned as we expect. In this case, having the model to put forward would be helpful. In absence of having the model, you can always go through and do it by drawing the transition state and tracking where everything goes. So I like to draw these out. So that we can kind of see where everything is going. And I think what I'll do is take this guy and drop it down sufficiently. So I can really make that group go endo. And I can bring it in a little bit closer. Okay, so now what happens? Is I'm making bonds there. The hydrogen is going to twist up out of the way. The nitrogen kind of comes down a little bit as that whole group turns to become sp3 hybridized. These groups go down and down slightly as they rotate kind of out and open up so that as we go through that reaction. Let's take the minus and make the minus go this way. Let's make that go that way and that go back there. So we'll make the six-membered ring system. In that six-membered ring system, as I drew, the hydrogen comes up. The nitrogen is going sort of downwards in its orientation. The double bond is back here. My aldehyde and hydrogen are oriented, actually it's not an aldehyde, it's an ester, are oriented in this orientation. where I know I've sort of drawn them both as coming down. This one does have to kind of come down. This one definitely comes down a lot, swings down quite a bit. And it's in the endo position, winds up down on that ring system. This is in the A position. A position winds up going back when flat. Endo winds up going back when flat. And so we flatten this whole system out. We see the double bond here. We have the amine going back. It was in the A position. That hydrogen is coming forward. The hydrogen is coming, wrong carbon again. The hydrogen is coming forward. And the ester in the endo position is going back. And this would have wound up to be plus minus. So the two products that I would get out of this, if I were to draw those two products, just for clarity, and those are enantiomers. Both from endo. So that's the plus minus component. All right, what happens if I try and do exo? So now we need to examine. So this was endo. We know that's major, that's what's going to happen. So that's the product that I expect. So the product out of this that is my major product, I should draw here just really quickly just to finish out this problem. There's my major product. Now what I need to do is I need to answer that question about exo and does exo matter in this one? Let's go see. So here's our exo question. Take the same model. But turn this guy around. Put the hydrogen inside. So now we're looking at exo for this group, pointed out away from the diene. That's going to give us the initial sort of three-dimensional structure. I'll get the double bond there. Hydrogen is up. The amine is down. And then this time, the ester is up and the hydrogen is down. That is going to be a system where that group is in the back position, but this group is in the forwards position. And I would get plus minus on this as well. But look at the orientation of the bonds. Here we wound up both back or both forward. So these are both from the endo, where endo gives, in this case, cis isomers. Exo is giving trans isomers. This time they're different, and it's because two stereoisomers are being created, two stereocenters are being created. The two stereocenters are the four possible isomers. And what we're seeing is that in this reaction, Let's do it here. In this reaction, what we're seeing is that this plus minus is from exo, endo, come on, Jason. And this one plus minus from exo, and that the endo is the major product. And now we can see the difference, because the difference between these two are that they are diastereomers. And so here, endo and exo does make a very big difference.
So I've discovered that I suck at drawing the flat things.
Okay.
I do have like a 3D modeling thing, so I'm going to try that with practice, even though it takes longer. But my question is, I am super struggling to see like between the exo and endo when everything shifted, when like the amine group and the hydrogen and then the big old group at the bottom. Like, I'm struggling to see why those shift
the way they do.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. This might take me a minute. Somewhere, someplace, hiding from me, I have an animation that I made. And I'm always hesitant to try to bring it up, simply because I don't know where the heck I hide this thing. Cabrillo. I made this animation so long ago. It's in with my bear with me while I hunt for it. It's in here. Well, it's not. Where did I hide that thing? All right, I'm going to find that for lecture and try to bring it into lecture. I got one other thing that I can maybe do. Let's try this. Let me share. Safari. And let's go to the WebMO server. And that's not going to have it. So let me log out from there and go to the secret, super secret server. Which it took me to the same place. That's not fair. Uncool. Okay. Deals all there. Endo. force calculation. So scan. Let's just try and do this. The only problem with this that I find is that when I hit generate bonds, it doesn't do, the bonds are all messed up because this is a transition state and it doesn't know exactly where the bonds are. But what's going on here is that there is a double bond between 2 and 3 and a double bond between 5 and 4. And the molecule is coming together and making the Diels-Alder product. And on one of these, what I have is the transition state search. And the force calculation, which allows me to show the vibrational frequency. And I don't know how slow I can make it go. But what I'm trying to do is put the diene on top, the dienophile that would have had the double bond between here and here, and looking at how these bonds move and migrate. As that bond is actually made. And that the vibrational frequency, as these two come together, something that is in this position, which is in the endo position, winds up kind of ending up in the downwards orientation in that boat structure that winds up being made, and these guys get pushed out. These guys out here that are in the A positions, they wind up being pushed up a little bit, but this guy really rotates up and has to go into the upwards position. It's a little bit hard to see in this model, but what you can see is that they're transitioning from sp2 hybridized flat to sp3 hybridized as they bend and twist as the new bond is made and as these guys come together. I know it's a little bit hard in this model without the double bonds and being able to see the double bonds, and that's what I was trying to find, was that I had had one that I created that allowed us to be able to see that better. And I don't have it here. It was an animation that I created a long time ago. And it kind of gets lost and I only ever really pull it up. Yeah, see, I'm not gonna find what I want here. I only ever pull it up when I get a student who asked the question that you have asked, that that it's difficult to see in the drawing. And so the animation makes it work. But the problem with the animation that I created is it requires me to use really super old software to try to play the animation. And every year that I try to play it, it gets harder and harder, just because the software has aged out. And being able to find the software to show it gets more complicated. But I'll try to get it for lecture.
It's all right. I got two whole sets of those things, so I'm good on carbons. I think okay. I'm just gonna play around with that and I'll make it click somehow.
It'll help definitely when you bring them together and break the bonds and move the bonds around. You'll see that with the model kit, it substantially helps to be able to see how the reaction goes forward. And yet, I'm still want to try to find that animation. okay, let me go back to giving us another problem. You guys ready for another one? Really only have one more good one. Actually, this is a perfect one to deal with right now. Okay. Okay, give major.
You got a screen share.
Oh, no, I don't. Just I hate the screen share thing. There's something about, I don't know why my brain has this issue, that I forget when it's screen sharing and not screen sharing, and I just go. Okay. Give major. And does endo versus exo matter? So the same sort of problem that we've been doing. Want to make a prediction? Does endo versus exo matter on this one? Nobody's willing to make a prediction. I love it.
I'm a little hesitant because it looks a lot like that one where, you know, it didn't matter, but we're starting off with a closed ring system. So I kind of want to say it matters a little bit.
Maybe. That is awesome. I love that answer. Okay. So obviously what needs to happen here is that there's some uncertainty because we don't know what the final product is fully going to look like. And it looks like, you're right, it looks like the one where it didn't matter, because it looks like we'll only be creating one stereo center. But the question is, are we only creating one stereo center? And if we do create only one stereo center, then it doesn't matter. But if we create more than one stereo center, then it does matter. So we know that. So if we create one stereo center, it won't matter. But if we create two or more, then it does matter. And the question is, how many stereo centers are we creating when we do this problem? So that's what we need to investigate. So that's perfect to have some uncertainty at this point, because visualizing the product and just looking at the problem doesn't get it for you. And I think that that's one of the things that if I teach you anything in this class, don't take things at face value. Dig into them. Draw out the products. Investigate the outcomes. And when there are predictable outcomes that can be explored, you should explore them and you should draw them out. And by drawing them out and taking the time to just draw them out, the answer will become clear. The answer is only unclear if you don't take those additional steps. That's when the uncertainty just sits there. And so that one little gem will guide you through so many different things, be it chemistry, math, physics, engineering, politics, whatever it is. The outcome is only uncertain until you go through and explore it. And when you explore it and you take a look at how many outcomes there are possible, look at each outcome, compare each outcome, the answer then becomes clear. And it just takes the time to sit down and go through the steps. It's just a process of thinking. Nice, Tracy. It used to, where I got that from, I'll tell you where I got that from, is that I would go to my research advisor all the time in graduate school, and I would show him the results of an experiment. And he would look at me and say, well, what does that mean? And I would say, I don't know. And he'd said, well, would you know the difference if you went and you did these other two experiments? And I said, yeah, it would absolutely, you would know. And he said, well, why haven't you done those experiments? At which point I would turn around and walk out and go back into the lab and go do those experiments. So if it's easy to do the experiments, do the experiments. If it's easy to draw the things out, draw them out. That's how we figure it out. Okay, let's find the partial minuses and partial positives. First step, push electrons in. There's our partial minus. Pull the electrons up. There's our partial positive. Okay, we've got partial minus and we've got partial positive. So they're going to go together this way. We can then take and we can draw out the exact same this one, I'm really going to extend these out a little bit just to make it a little bit easier sometimes to draw this. And then take and stick a point up to make the bicycle, or to make the bridge of the five-membered ring system. Remember, your five-membered ring systems are not flat. Five-membered ring systems pucker, and particularly so when they have the double bonds in them. Even though we think of this as being sp2, as it goes through the transition state, we need this group to be up out of the way in order to be able to go through the transition state. So your hydrogens are out here at the ends, and then we're going to take and we're going to orient this group endo to the inside, and we've got our methoxy out here, we've got our partial minus, and we've got our partial positive. And so far, all of that is looking the way that I want it to align. We're going to create new bonds there and there. Electrons are going to flow around the system from the partial minus. I always like to go from the partial minus to the partial positive, thinking about it in terms of nucleophile and electrophile. These electrons swing up, these electrons swing back. So that's where everything is going. Now we can draw that. Oops. There's that hydrogen up, aldehyde down in the endo position. Okay, and so when I draw that out flat, we may not have thought about how do I draw this out flat. Most of the time what we do is we say, oh, well, this just is a bicyclic ring system. And so as a bicyclic ring system, the way that we would typically draw this is we would typically draw with this. We would typically just leave it this way, but it can be drawn flat and should be shown how to draw it flat. Okay, so that's our typical three-dimensional sort of like relaxing the bond angles a little bit in order to draw it the more that we would, the way that we would in three dimensions. But if we wanted to draw this two-dimensional, we draw the six-membered ring system. We draw the methoxy group there. We give it the stereochemistry for the aldehyde. And if we go through and follow the numbering system, let's start at the partial minus for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And we'll give that guy 7. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 around the six-membered ring system and number 7. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 and number 7. And we started here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And number 7 is where? Number 7 is connected to 4 and 1. But is it up or is it back? Is it forward or back?
Isn't it forward?
It is, because my vision is looking down on it this way. So it's actually forward. And the way that I draw it is to draw two wedge bonds that come together in the center of the molecule. and that's how you indicate that. And remember that this would be plus minus. Okay, so what do we need to do now?
The question.
Mm-hmm. But how do I explore it? What's gonna be the only difference if I do this exo instead of endo? Okay, so let's do exo. Exo is going to ask me to do the same thing. Except as I draw this, the aldehyde goes out and the hydrogen goes in, and I make bonds here and here. Electrons swing around. There's a little cleaner. I'm going to draw this not quite as extreme as I was doing before. I'm skipping over sort of this drawing and going directly to this drawing. My aldehyde is up and my hydrogen is down. So this now, if I want to take and draw this in this sort of orientation, what I would get is that guy. Notice that this is still up in terms of the way, but what happened to the aldehyde? Aldehyde goes up. And in terms of the exo, we would also get plus minus.
Alrighty, so they're diastereomers because one is the cis and the other's trans, or do we not apply that because?
We can apply that, but cis and trans doesn't quite do it, but they are diastereomers, you're correct. And the reason that I would say, or the way to look at it and say is we've created 1, 2, 3 stereocenters. And because we have flipped only one of those stereocenters, we have not flipped the other set. They are indeed diastereomers, and they are indeed different. And the cis and trans language you can sort of assume because this is back and this is forward. So these are obviously trans on the ring system in the way that they're oriented. These are cis on the ring system in the way that they are oriented. So yes, the cis and trans language could be used, but as Diels older products get more complicated, the cis and trans language sort of breaks down because of this bicyclic ring system. It's harder to say cis and trans. But it is clear that these two are diastereomers. And that was hard to visualize without sitting down and drawing it. And so it absolutely does matter. And this one from the endo transition state is major. And the one from the exo would be minor. So if we draw this out and we take the reaction, let me visualize the reaction first, and we draw the reaction like this. Let's say 85, 50. We get two different products. A product which is from my endo transition state, and a product which is from my exo. And this one is major. And they are diastereomers. And they are different. All right, how did that go? Did you guys follow that argument? Drew, as you're running out the door, I think this is about the end of what I was going to do anyway. So I think you're catching just about everything. It's just any questions that are going to come up. That was sort of the last exercise that I wanted to hit. So we're all good.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're all set, buddy. Yeah, I'm happy to deal with any questions real quick. That's the last exercise that I kind of wanted to show in walking through these co-op problems. But I think this was a good set of problems to kind of walk through and talk about some of these different problems. And giving you some other tools, making sure that you remember numbering and how critical numbering is as you watch me make mistakes, that numbering is just a critical skill. Sometimes, like I said, it clouds things or obscures things as you're trying to add in all the numbers, but it's such a critical skill for not getting these in the wrong positions, making sure that they're coming out in the right places. It's so easy. You saw how easily I made that mistake. Just a little frighteningly easy. So be careful and number things. And I'll try and find that animation and bring that animation in so we can look at that in lecture real quick. And then I think we're going to skip and go to, we're just going to skip most of the rest of the paracyclic stuff and go to carbonyl compounds and the chemistry of carbonyl compounds, because there's a lot of good stuff in there that is much more interesting that I want to cover. Okay. All right. If there's no more questions, I think that's it for today for this part. And then I'll see you guys either in office hours at 11 or at 12:40 for lecture. All right. You're welcome. Thanks, guys.